When I grew up, I lived out in, back when dirt was young, and
Go ahead. When you had a pet Tyrannosaurus.
yeah.
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindel and David Sims. Relax, HIPAA help is on the way.
In today's episode, we're going to discuss the basic concepts of encryption for your practice.
And how encryption should be handled under HIPAA compliance and the security rule.
And then we're going to go into what is the recommendation for doing the encryption within your practice. So, Donna, we hear a lot of things these days about encryption, and there's all types of confusion at times around encryption. What it is, how to apply it, what does HIPAA say about it, you know, is it necessary, not necessary, you know, which ways do you implement it, you know, because we got different levels, you got encryption, we hear about encryption on hard drives, we hear about encryption in the cloud, encryption in email, and all these things, you know, for somebody who doesn't know a lot about what that is can be very confusing, and they can be making a lot of mistakes when it comes to encryption. So let's do a little high-level overview of the basic concept of encryption.
Yeah, that's something we run into a good bit is the confusion over, we're encrypted. In fact, I just had a conversation where somebody told me their email was encrypted because it used TLS. And I asked them what that was, and they didn't know. So... Well, it was a scary discussion, but so the basic concepts of encryption that we have to look at, especially how it applies in your business, is there's encryption when data is moving around from place to place and across the internet and across your network, and then there's encryption of data stored on your systems and your hard drives and your mobile devices. And in the world of computer geeks, they call it data in transit when it's moving around. That makes sense. And data at rest when it's on your devices. And the encryption works slightly different. The concept of encryption of just simply it scrambles up the information in a way that unless you have a key on either end, you can't read it in the middle. And most people get that point that it scrambles things up, but they don't understand that concept of managing those keys. At least that's what I see.
So it's kind of like when I was a kid and I would have these things like in the Cracker Jack box that was all this jumbled up mess. But when I stuck the little red glasses on or used a little red magnifying glass, I could actually see what it said.
That's right.
So it's kind of the same thing. So the magnifying glass would be the encryption key in that scenario. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, for those of us that are old enough to remember getting that kind of paper toy in there.
Hey, look at here. They still have Cracker Jacks boxes out there. I've seen
them. With the little glasses?
Oh, I don't know about that. I think they still have gifts in them. I don't know.
Now I'm gonna find out.
That reminds me, and I don't want to chase the rabbit here, but it does remind me of when I was a kid. We could get chemistry sets. You know, we could blow stuff up and kill people, and you can go to the store and buy that kind of stuff. You can't do that anymore. No. That's sad. But anyway, back to encryption.
And they didn't even have safety glasses with them.
all that safety stuff. Yeah. That's the. Yeah. We're both giving our age away. Yeah. Yeah, we could ride a bike without a helmet. Ha ha ha.
That's why I got scars. So, yes, you're right. The little wonder glasses that decode everything. So on one end, you have your Cracker Jack. On one end, you have your Cracker Jack box message. And on the other end, you have the red glasses so that you can read it. And if you don't know both ends, if you don't agree on what that's going to be, then nothing in between can read it. So you have to know both ends. That key. The key is the key.
The key is the key.
Yeah. Don't you get
it? And the key has to be guarded very much so.
Yeah, and you don't store the key with the data that you're encrypting.
So I couldn't write the key down and like tape it to my laptop or the computer that it actually has the encryption on, right?
Well, you could. However, it defeats the entire purpose of actually encrypting it.
Oh.
Yeah. I saw a picture from some folks that were an IT staff that were recycling, you know, giving out new laptops to workforce and taking in their old ones. And they picked up several that had a post-it note right there. It, you opened up the laptop and right there it had, what's my encryption key? And it was this nice complex key they had given them. There mm-hmm. it was, just post-it note right on the laptop. So it was, don't even bother encrypting if that's what you're going to do.
Yeah, I see that more times than I care to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a conversation with a doctor not long ago, and he said, we need to find a way to make all these this encryptions and all these passwords a lot easier and less intrusive. And which I kind of chuckled, not at him, but just because the having security and having convenience a lot of times don't go hand in hand. You know, typically the better security is, the less convenient it's going to be. You can't leave the front door of your house open
mm-hmm.
and expect it to be secure. Yes, it would be convenient to just come home and just walk right in the door, not use a key, you know, leave everything unlocked like we used to back in, well, like you used to back in the 60s. And but you can't do that anymore. And you know, I guess another analogy, because I like analogies, is if you were, you know, you were at home and, you know, if you want to keep things secure, then you would use, you know, your deadbolts and your all these other locks and a shotgun at the front door and all that. But if you're just going to leave all that undone, then it doesn't do any good.
Well, yeah, it's like people that buy an expensive security system and pay a subscription for every month and they never turn it on mm-hmm. because it's a hassle.
Yeah.
And it's the analogy I've used before in trying to get people to understand the difference in the world that you live in now and all of it being interconnected is, you know, when I grew up, I lived out in, you know, back when dirt was young and
go ahead. When you had a pet Tyrannosaurus.
yeah. Me and my pterodactyl friends. But we didn't have to worry about locking our cars. And it was a whole big thing. If you took your keys out of the car, somebody in the family, the huge family I'm from, they would get mad at you because they needed to use that car or they wanted to move it. And the keys should be in it. So, I mean, the keys were just in every vehicle we had on the farm. And that's because pretty much the only people that were going to be around were us. There was nobody else. And if somebody did show up, it was a stranger, we would notice them because no one else was there. So mm-hmm. it wasn't a very complicated security system to deal with. But on the same side of that, it would have been really easy to take everything except for the fact that, you know, my uncles and cousins had a lot of shotguns and stuff. I guess that would have come into play. Mm-hmm. But today, I don't know anybody that would, they wouldn't think twice about leaving keys in the car up there still in some cases, but they are not one of them going to bring that vehicle, even one that they don't really worry that much about, down into downtown Atlanta and park it in a parking deck and leave the keys in it. Because if they do, they're going to be almost certain that thing's going to be gone or everything in it when they come back.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is downtown, you're in you know, a cosmopolitan area. There are people all around that you don't know, and they could wander in and out, and you have no way of knowing, and nobody else that you know around is going to notice if they're doing something different. How often have you had a car alarm going off forever and all the people around are just angry that it's noisy. Nobody's looking to save anybody. And so that's the difference in sitting at your computer. Used to, you could sit at your computer, you were the only one around. Mm-hmm. And today, you plug into the internet, and it is the minute you hit the internet, the whole world is standing around your unlocked car if you don't have it locked.
Right. And you bring up an excellent point, because a lot of people think that it's a one-way window when you connect to the internet. It's you looking at the internet, but what you don't realize, or a lot of people don't realize, is that the internet can also look at you. And does look at you. So when you connect your business to the internet, you know, you just, oh, I just want to check my email and get on eBay or whatever, Facebook. That works both ways. And if your information is not secure, then people can easily get into your systems and look at what you have, or steal what you have, or monitor what you're doing. So that's an excellent point to bring up.
Yeah, well, that's why we know malware and stuff like that. That, you know, there's the new crypto ransomware where it encrypts.
Mm-hmm.
But then they take the key, you know, they go in, encrypt it with a key, remove the key, and now you can't get to the data.
Right.
And that is exactly what you're supposed to do with encryption at rest. Now, the good news for most people that don't have to worry about configuring encryption, a lot of the stuff that in transit stuff is handled automatically for you, because those connections are being handled behind the scenes. That's why you forget that they're there. It's the data at rest is what makes things more complicated for the average user, because you can have encryption on your entire hard drive or encryption just on certain folders. And you need to know how your encryption works in order to use it properly. So it's not uncommon to find cases where people think they have everything encrypted, and it's one folder over here that no one's putting anything in that's encrypted. All the real information is over here in unencrypted space on the drive.
Right. So with all this talk about encryption, what does HIPAA actually say about it? There's, you know, if you do any kind of Googling, you'll probably see some people say you have to do it, or you should do it, or you don't have to do it. So what's the big deal about that? What does the law say?
Well, under HIPAA, encryption of your data is an addressable item.
Okay.
And a lot of people say, well, addressable means I don't really have to do it. But what addressable means is you need to evaluate your environment and determine how you can protect the data, either by encrypting it or in some other manner that is reasonable and appropriate for your environment. It doesn't mean you don't have to do it. And whatever decisions you make, you have to create the extensive documentation that explains why you've decided to do encryption that the way that you do.
Okay. So I want to reiterate this, because it's a very important point you brought up. You have two things within the law which are required and addressable. And when something is addressable, that does not mean that it does not have to be done. It means it has to be addressed, and you have to document, even if you didn't do it, you have to document why you chose not to do that particular addressable part. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. I got it.
Hey.
So, in looking at being addressable and using encryption, what is it that we have to do, or what is it that a business owner has to do when it comes to figuring out, okay, I know this is addressable, but how do I know, should I be doing it or should I not be doing it?
Well, a lot of it has to do with when you think about addressable, it's not, oh, well, I can't afford that, or I don't know how to do it, so therefore my addressable decision is I'm not going to do it. What your decision needs to be is, how else can I protect that data that I am storing somewhere from being improperly used or disclosed?
Mm-hmm.
That is what you're ultimately supposed to do with everything. And the rule is, it's an element that I'm supposed to use to make sure this information can't be improperly used or disclosed.
Right.
And so you need to take each area that you store information. If it's encrypted, great, you're meeting the standard. But if it's not encrypted, then you have to think about, how else am I going to protect it? How else am I going to make sure nothing happens? And then if you have other ways, then you can use those, and you deal with encryption in other cases where you don't have other ways. So it's more not of, do I do it or do I not? It is, how else can I protect it without using encryption?
Right.
So an example I like to use is on a server that's on the third floor of an office building that is only accessible with card keys, and it's inside an office at the far end of a hallway, and then there's two locked doors you got to go through to get to the server. I think you're pretty good. You don't have to encrypt that too much. You can say, I think it's reasonable and appropriate in my environment to assume that that server isn't going to be stolen,
mm-hmm.
so that the data encrypted on it should be taken care of just with my physical safeguards and my administrative safeguards that say, you know, the door has to stay locked and all of those kind of things. So I'm going to use those other safeguards to protect that data. Okay, I'm not going to encrypt that. But if I got a laptop holding PHI, or I'm not certain that it doesn't hold PHI, I can't say that. So it's no longer reasonable and appropriate for me to say I'm going to protect that without encryption with my physical security. So that's where you need to figure out. Either I don't ever allow PHI on there, or I've got to protect it in some manner. And the only real way to do it is encryption.
Right. Let's address another misnomer about encryption. One thing that I've run into before is when people have their data encrypted, or they have their drives encrypted, and they think they're all good because they don't understand encryption, and that's why we're covering some of this. But what I have found out is that most people don't realize that when they have, let's say they've booted up that laptop or that computer, and they've entered in that encryption key, or in some cases it may even be automatic happening in the background tied to something else. But in either case, the encryption key has been applied. They're in there using their computer. Let's say they get up and walk away from that computer, and somebody comes in and throws a thumb drive in and copies some data to it and leaves. That data, it does not carry the encryption with it because it was copied while in an unencrypted state.
Correct. Yeah.
And I think that's something a lot of people don't realize.
Yeah, you've got to be logged out for it to re-encrypt and not just let them in.
Yep. So if your data gets missing, and where this probably comes into play more than anything is when somebody attaches a file to email and they go, oh, well, my computer's encrypted, so I can attach anything I want to an email, and it's encrypted, right? Because my computer's encrypted. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, that's that we use TLS encryption on our email. And
yeah.
For those that don't know, TLS is a transmission standard, and it has more to do with moving the emails back and forth from different servers, but it has nothing to do with encrypting the content that is landing on those servers.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a serious problem, and a regular discussion is emailing PHI is a very controversial subject to some people. I say, if you're not going to use some of the high-end encryption tools, and that means you must know how to encrypt it, because most email systems, unless you're working on a really high-end one, they don't automatically encrypt things from your end and the receiver's end.
Right. Because you can send an encrypted email, and the receiver's not going to be able to open it if they don't have a way to decrypt it on the other end.
Mm-hmm. And if they open it and then turn around to send it somebody unencrypted, your efforts were for naught.
Yep. So that's a very important point to bring up, is that encryption has to go with that data since it's in motion. You know, whether it's in motion because it was copied to a thumb drive, or whether it's in motion because of an email, you know, it doesn't automatically just keep that encryption because it was encrypted at some stage. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's encrypted at rest, it doesn't mean it's always encrypted.
No. Uh-uh.
So
if you're able to see it, it's clearly unencrypted.
Right.
Or decrypted, rather, is the proper term.
Right.
So if you can see it, at that point is the point that it is no longer encrypted. And in order to give it to somebody, you are going to need to get it to them. And once you format it in a way and shoot it off, it's only encrypted at rest using that encryption. And once you send it out, then it goes into encryption in transit. And unless you've done something special on the other end, it receives that transit and then it's exactly what you sent them because you could see it when you sent them. So you got to have an extra step in there to give them a special key that they have to enter.
Right. And some people think when they get into thinking about sending PHI, some people don't realize that you could either, I mean, there's different ways that you can do it wrong, but you can send PHI and mistakenly send it to the wrong person, which probably everybody, if you've used email long enough, you sent an email to the wrong person. But there's the ability for people to see emails or any type of traffic that you're sending out. If they're doing any type of packet sniffing is what it's called, you know, for, I guess, a technical term to use. But they basically can look at the information that's traveling out of your network over the Internet. So they can grab that information if they need to.
Yeah, that goes back to that could be somebody in China doing that. monitoring your network and you don't even know. But more importantly, I was actually just reading a case where a practice offers a patient portal for secure messaging. And then if you don't want to use that, because again, it's like the doctor wanted to back off on the complexities of security. I don't want that. I don't care. It can go unsecured. Okay, and they said, here's the paperwork that you need to tell us that you're approving us to send it unsecured because there are no guarantees, and we need you to give us the email address you want us to use. They did exactly what the patient said, use the exact email address that the patient gave them. It's written in the patient's own handwriting. It was the wrong email address. The patient gave them the wrong one. They sent them the information, and now the patient's going, trying to get lawyers to take it on and having a fit about it. But no lawyer, as soon as the lawyers see all of the information that the practice has, they're like, no, you don't have a case because you told them to do it. So, you can't say you violated my HIPAA rights by doing exactly what I told you to do, even though, they told him. Told the patient and made them sign off that they understood that was not a secure method of sharing information. And they confirmed this is your email address. But that same patient is still causing problems for them. Every time that patient goes and tries to get another lawyer involved, the practice is still having to respond to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, the latest round or what I was reading about was that the latest version of the patient's information back to the practice was that they were going to send a letter to HHS and copy all the local news outlets on the letter about how they violated their privacy rights by doing exactly what I asked you to do, even though you told me I really shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So it's a very dangerous area to even go down.
So what would you recommend as far as not just, well, I guess the whole thing, we're on the topic of encryption. So let's cover some recommendations on encryption and not to get technical. I know that our listeners can, some of them are going to be healthcare IT people and they're definitely going to understand this. And some of them are going to be practice managers and maybe doctors that aren't going to have, quite the same exposure to the technical side of encryption, but what should they be looking at to put into place to make sure that encryption is working for them and not against them?
Well, the number one thing that I would tell anybody to worry about, or that I do tell anybody to worry about, is mobile devices. And that means whether it's a portable hard drive, a USB thumb drive, laptop, cell phone, smartphone rather, tablet, anything that's easy to move around and can have data or access to data on it, that's the first thing you should worry about encrypting.
Okay.
Number one. And once you deal with all of those, you're going to have your hands full. So in the encryption world, those devices are all going to have a wide variety of methods and things that you can do to encrypt things. You can encrypt portions or all of it, as we talked about. And the other piece is, do you even allow that activity to occur? As in, can I even put data on a USB drive? You know, and you wouldn't believe the number of cases where somebody's going to look at something at home and they just dump it on a thumb drive and then they lose it. And so that's a big thing of controlling that and not allowing those in the office at all. But you can't, most people can't afford the software that you can, put in place that says shut down all the USB ports and stuff. If they're not a more advanced technology level, they don't have that. But you could even just put tape over it and tell everybody they're not supposed to do it. You know, that's I think my newest thing. I'm going to get some carding tape and put it over every USB port I see.
Have that kind of the security tape where somebody takes it off, it leaves the remnants of your name there.
Don't tell me you didn't use that.
Yeah, you liar. It says right here on the thing.
But those are number one, mobile devices. Number two is, what are you going to do about email?
Yeah. Hey, before we move on to that, on the mobile devices, let's just take 5 seconds to mention that texting PHI is a big no-no. Since we're talking about mobile devices, I mean, it could be whether it's a text message or a message where somebody sends a picture of an X-ray, any of that type of stuff.
Oh my God.
Can be a huge no-no. And that kind of goes into the mobile device thing as well. Even if your mobile device, your smartphone's encrypted, you still can't send an unencrypted text message.
Yeah, it's unless the same as email.
Unless you have a platform that you can do that with, and there's several out there for that.
Yep.
But you can't do that either. So I just wanted to mention that before we jump into the next.
Well, and that also applies. Another step to that applies to people who don't have smartphones, and they are out there, who think, because I don't have a smartphone, I don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. And I actually had someone say to me, I don't even use a smartphone. I don't have to worry about any of that. I can text my doctor what he wants me to text. And my doctor's telling me to do it. And I said, well, you tell him you're not supposed to. But and her whole point was, how can that possibly be a problem? If he's got everything password protected on his, how can it possibly be a problem if I'm doing it, even though I can't? And I was like, do you ever let anybody else use your phone? No. Do you have grandkids? Yes. Do you ever let them play with your phone? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. The first time a kid sends a message that you sent and forwards it or copies it or something accidentally, you're done.
Yep.
So it
not only that, but when you send a text message,
it's open.
It goes to, let's just say you're using Verizon or AT&T, doesn't matter, but it goes into their servers somewhere, and it probably stays somewhere forever.
Yeah.
It's not going away. It doesn't go from my phone to the doctor's phone. It goes from my phone through some servers. It gets saved and then goes out the other end. I mean, this well documented. That's what happened. It's not, I'm not making this up. That information stops along the way, even though it's, a lightning fast text message. It stops along the way somewhere and gets saved.
Yep.
Unless you're using an encrypted type solution, which will send it from point A to point B and not stop anywhere in between.
Well, or even if it does go somewhere in between, it's encrypted when it gets there.
Right.
That's like the ring, the two cans and the string.
Was it Progresso commercial?
Yeah. Ring, ring.
So what other recommendations were there? I kind of got you off track with the mobile device.
Oh, so then, you know, you deal with the mobile devices, you deal with email. Email is a major gaping hole for making sure that people understand that you can't send PHI via email. There are some ways that you can make things not re-identifiable, but you don't want that to be your standard policy. You want people that are educated in making those decisions able to do that, but your standard policy means it's what everybody's going to, your baseline is no PHI via email, period. And then you have to step up from there to get it approved, whether it's to a patient. You need to make sure that your patients understand, because, you know, just like a lot of people that work in a HIPAA-compliant environment don't truly understand what that means, like we were just talking about the hitting on the other servers along the way, your patients don't understand it either.
Mm-hmm.
So when you throw those things out on email, again, it's out there forever.
Right.
So,
one thing I've told people, or at least my clients, is that it's always best not to send PHI over email, period. Just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have to do it, I always recommend them to have one person in that office that does that function, and that's it. Don't allow anybody and everybody to do that.
Right. You have to know exactly what to do, and there's some very specific things. So you can take a file and encrypt that file and use some of the zip tools that encrypt if they're following proper standards, but you definitely want to understand clearly what it requires to do it. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I had somebody one time say, no worries, I know how to do this. And they send me an email with an encrypted file, and in the same email is the password for the encrypted file.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that helped.
Let me tape my password onto,
yeah.
onto it.
It's helpful.
Yeah. That doesn't work that way. Okay.
No. So, but if you worry about those two first, by the time you get those done, all of your other stuff, and then you're getting into your servers and your cloud apps and all of those kind of things. And a lot of that stuff is often going to be managed by a business associate, where you should get them to tell you what your encryption is.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it a whole lot easier. But
don't let your cloud providers tell you that because you have a cloud-based EMR or EHR that you don't have to worry about encryption, because there's a high likelihood you still have PHI somewhere on your network that still needs to be encrypted. I've not found a client yet that hasn't been the case.
Oh, yeah. We've had the, I don't need to do a security risk assessment because I use a cloud EMR. I'm good. I got HIPAA covered.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what? How do you get to that cloud EMR?
It's way up there in the cloud.
Yeah, so it's definitely something that when you that's the kind of, you can more or less outsource a lot of the big stuff because a vendor is going to be able to tell you, but don't just assume. You need to ask them,
mm-hmm.
you know, where is this encrypted? How is it encrypted? Where is it stored? You know, and what kinds of assurances do you have from any of your business associates or vendors that you're using to store my data?
Right.
That's a whole nother topic.
Yep. I'll write that down for another show.
Okay. Another episode.
Yeah, episode. Okay, I got it. So as we wrap things up here, we've talked about encryption. We talked about what encryption is. We've talked about what the HIPAA security rule says about encryption, that it's addressable, and what addressable means, and how we're supposed to interpret that and what we should do with it. And also, we went through some recommendations. So did we miss anything at all, Donna?
Well, I'm sure we did, because it's a broad topic, but I think that most of the basic concepts of encryption and the ideas around it, we covered those in most of the HIPAA stuff. So I can't imagine us adding much more at this point in this conversation.
Right. We'll save all the rest of it for the next episode. So we'll wrap it up here, and we'll say that if anybody has any questions, comments, or suggestions about this episode, you can find us at helpmewithhippa.com. That is www.helpmewithhippa.com. You can contact us there and give us your questions, comments, or suggestions about the show. And we appreciate you listening.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhippa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.